Now to the third issue, a widely used method for judging the effectiveness and quality of a researcher's output. It's called the Citation Index and measures how often researchers' papers are referenced by others in their papers. The more citations, the better, right? Well, maybe. That's unless you're over-citing yourself or getting a cabal of your mates to cite you and you do it for them. John Ioannidis and his colleagues have studied this using a massive amount of data in an attempt to get a level playing field. John is Professor of Statistics and Medicine at Stanford University in California. And before I unleashed him on the Citation Index, I thought I'd first get him to comment on p-values, which he actually supports. John, let's just start with the p-value story. Andrew Davidson's been talking about getting rid of it, not completely, but certainly far less emphasis on it. It's pretty arbitrary and doesn't allow for uncertainty, which in fact, I'm kind of surprised that you object to it because many of the interviews I've done with you are all about uncertainty and how it's very hard to get certainty in medical research. And if you try to do that, you're usually wrong.
That's true. I think that it's important to be able to communicate the right amount of uncertainty, and a p-value alone would not suffice. However, I think that just getting rid of it will get us into a situation where we have even fewer tools to navigate into that mess of uncertainty. That's probably not a good idea. And replace it with what?
Well, replace it, I think Andrew's saying, with a wider range of measures, which gives a more sophisticated assessment of what you've actually found. His argument being that because it's an arbitrary cutoff and you've got uncertainty around that cutoff, you could be rejecting valuable interventions, or on the converse, you could be accepting interventions which actually don't work.
I'm very much in favor of adding metrics that may be able to confer how big is the effect of an intervention, like a medical intervention, along with measures of uncertainty. P-values have a very long history of misuse. However, they can tell us useful things if they're used properly. For example, where we set up some goal ahead of time and we try to run a fair assessment, and we have pre-specified what we want to do, and we have some rules of engagement, and then we try to see what happens. We think very carefully. We design the study very carefully. I think that if we don't have that set of rules in that particular set of circumstances, then any result that we get, we can interpret it based on what our beliefs or our biases or our preconceptions are. So we may get a result that would have failed, but then we say we succeeded.
So what you're saying is your problem is as much the moving of the goalposts after you've done the study as the cutoff itself. In other words, if you set the cutoff and you stick to it and stick by the rules, don't move the goalposts after you've done the study. Where do you sit with the p-value being 0.05? This is getting incredibly technical for the audience, but we've been through it with Andrew a little bit already. But that's the kind of arbitrary cutoff. Should it be more stringent than that, p equals 0.01 or 0.001?
I think that in most situations, a p-value of 0.05 is a very weak threshold. It's very, very easy to pass. And both myself and many others have argued that in the large majority of situations, you should seek a more demanding threshold. And we have argued, for example, using 0.005.
Let's move on to this issue of citation. Since now that we're talking about the quality of evidence, and this is about the quality of a researcher and how much you are quoted and your paper is quoted in the scientific literature. Your hypothesis is that people are citing themselves and giving themselves a leg up.
This is a part of the game, and to some extent it's partly legitimate. If you have done some work in the past, that work needs to be referred to in order to have continuity and to know what is really the new contribution of information. At the other end of the spectrum, we do have situations where a number of scientists are over-citing themselves and or their colleagues who are co-authors in the same paper repeatedly refer to their own work, and this is done beyond measure.
And you've looked at the 100,000 most cited authors across all scientific fields, looking at six measures of citations, and you found a phenomenon that you call citation farms. What are they?
Citation farms is the situation where you have a number of scientists who are citing each other. It's not necessary that they're on the same papers, but somehow they have a pact or an agreement that I will cite you and you will cite me. And this means that if you search directly for self-citations where someone is citing his or her own work, you will not necessarily find that many. But if you try to see, well, how many people are really citing that person's work, then you see that there's a cluster of a few individuals who repeatedly and massively would cite each other.
But couldn't that just be that they're all in the same area and they're working in the same field and therefore it's the same body of knowledge?
I think it's an issue of magnitude. So, of course, people who are in the same scientific area or in the vicinity of a scientific area would tend to cite each other to a good extent. But in these situations where we're talking about citation farms, this happens like a hundredfold more compared to a natural type of citing behavior. The big advantage of looking across all scientists in all science, which is what we did in the database that we created, is that you can have a sense of what are the norms and what is the typical situation, what is the average situation, and also what is the average situation across each scientific field and each scientific subfield.
And what were your p-values in this study, John?
We had no p-values at all because it was an entirely descriptive project.
Just being cheeky. But the why is it important? Does saying that I'm the second most cited author in the physiology of the heart get you more grants, get you promotions at work? What does it do for you?
Citations and citation indices can be powerful and they can also be subversive. They can be used properly and they can be easily misused. As scientists, we like to measure things, and it's unavoidable that people will start measuring scientific productivity and its impact. Is that good or is it bad? There's mixed feelings about it, and I think that I have seen a tremendous amount of misuse and misinterpretation of different metrics. This is exactly the reason why we try to create these standardized databases. We looked at data from all 35 million authors across science who have published at least a single paper. Then we focused more deeply on about 6.8 million who have published at least 5 papers. We present percentiles of performance with different metrics within these 7 million. And then we give very granular raw data on the top 100,000. I think this may help to standardize and normalize and put things into perspective, because if you don't do that, then each scientist or each organization or each team will present their own metrics in their own way with their own measurements without standardization, without being able really to put them in context. It's as if you're trying to measure something and you have 100 different scales that no one has ever taken the time to see if they're measuring the same thing or whether they're 50% off or 300% off just as a start.
So, I mean, what we've done in today's program is lifted the lid, the bonnet, if you like, and looked inside the engine room of science and medical science in particular. Really, it's not up to the public, but it's got to be the administrators who run science to actually police it a bit more effectively.
I think it's just a starting point, and obviously there's far more to see once you lift the lid.
John Yudias, thanks for being so uncontroversial yet again on the Health Report.
Thank you for inviting me.
John Yudias is Professor of Medicine, Health Research Policy, Biomedical Data Science and Statistics at Stanford University School of Medicine in California. I'm Norman Swan. This has been the Health Report. See you next week.